All right. And once again, we are here at Cinema Slayers, but without our fearless leader, Sterling. So we're not going to really do news today again, but we thought that it would be appropriate, since we are going to be reviewing Poor Things, to just further expand the conversation about the Oscars. And Emma Stone did win the Academy Award for Best Actress for this film. So just any thoughts on that, Heather, as far as, I mean, especially just after seeing the film, not so much the film, but after seeing the film, who won, who didn't win? Did you have any feelings about it?
I mean, I wasn't surprised that she won. You know, I kind of expected that she would. I did. I'll be honest. I kind of was rooting for Lily Gladstone. I think we made that clear in a lot of episodes since Killers of the Flower Moon, because Lily Gladstone was just like, I don't know, just the fact that she was acting on DiCaprio and De Niro level, you know, and like she doesn't have nearly as much stuff under her belt yet. Like she outshined them. Like it was just, she was so good with it. But I'm never mad at Emma Stone winning, because she is actually one of my favorite actresses, you know, and so I completely understand. And like, you know, after seeing this movie, obviously, that we're about to talk about, I get why, you know what I mean? I get why. I even heard people like seeing comments from people on like TikTok and things like that, that were like, I don't even like Emma Stone and I think she deserved it. Like people saying stuff like that. You know what I mean? But, which is weird. I don't know how you don't like Emma Stone, but yeah, like I wasn't surprised by it, and I'm not mad at it either. Like, I feel like, you know, I'm always going to be happy with her winning because she's so talented, and she also just seems like a good person. Like, I appreciated her speech, and like, you know, and I liked that she made jokes with it, but she was also serious with it. And she kind of, she's very like charismatic, you know, and just very much, you feel like she's very genuine, you know, and she's like talking about like, oh, I broke my dress during the Ken song, and like just being funny and, you know, kind of involving the crowd with her. But it, yeah, so she's just very a ray of sunshine, I think. But yeah, I do get why she won. And I'm not mad at it. I would have just rooted for Lily because the opportunity seemed right for her to win, and the movie role seemed right for her to win. But again, not mad at it. I think she, you know, Emma Stone was excellent in this, which we'll talk about. So, it was kind of expected. And that's why I'm kind of like, people that were like, oh man, we thought that Lily had it under lock. And I'm like, but I feel like Emma was winning like all of the awards this season with it. I think there was maybe one that she didn't. And I don't even remember which one. Golden Globe, maybe? I don't know. No, I think she did. They both won Golden Globes. I think
she did get the Globe. Yeah, they both got it.
Yeah. But I feel like she kind of like swept this category all award season. With maybe the exception of, I think maybe it was the SAG Awards or something where like Lily took it, but every other one she got. So it wasn't really like, oh, this is a shock I never saw coming. Like it feels like it made sense, you know, but I understand. And I love the support of Lily, so I get it. But yeah, I mean, and you could tell too that even Emma Stone was surprised. You could tell like she wasn't expecting it either, honestly. So I kind of appreciated seeing that, where she just wasn't expecting it, you know, and you could tell that that was a genuine like what kind of moment when she got her name announced. So I'm happy for her, you know, but yeah, it makes sense. But I would have been fine with Lily, but I'm fine with Emma as well.
Yeah, I get that. And I think that for the most part, I fall in a similar place. Like sometimes you go through these Oscars every year and you go through these wins and losses and you look at the category and who's nominated. And sometimes you are just disappointed with who they chose, or you're like, man, how did this person win over this person? And you kind of can't figure it out. And I'm talking about not a person who you see one movie and haven't seen the others. I'm talking about you've seen the movies, you saw the performances, and you're just like, I can't even wrap my head around how they made this choice. And kind of to what you were saying, this doesn't feel like that. Like it, yeah. It's just one of those where you just, like you said, if you see the movie Poor Things, you understand, like you understand why Emma Stone won. And so it's just kind of one of those things where, like, if Lily had won, I would have been happy with that. I wouldn't have necessarily been pounding the table for Emma Stone. And I think the vice versa is true now. You know, I don't think I can necessarily pound the table for Lily, but you know, it would have been cool. If Lily won, but I can't find myself using words like robbed, or she should have got it and she didn't, or anything like that. Those words, I don't think I can apply them to this particular situation, you know? But I understand the sentiment on both sides. Like, it would have been great to see someone of Native American descent win, especially for that movie, the subject matter, the passion upon which it was made, and what happened to the actual woman that was being depicted. So I feel like somewhere on an emotional level, it would have felt like not justice, but it would have felt right. I guess it just would have made me feel good if that person had taken the Oscar, just given what the subject matter was of Killers of the Flower Moon. And then that was based on a true story. So there's a little bit of that too. So it's easy to see how people could root for that and root for that performance and feel like, oh man, you know, I really think she should have won. And on top of all of that, those are just surrounding situations. She was great in the role. She stood out amongst Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro. You know, these are the top, these are like top veteran A-list.
Right.
Just have almost won and been nominated for every award in the book actors. And she was in there with them and still was able to shine in this role. And you could argue she didn't get a lot of screen time. She didn't get as much screen time as they did. You know, she did get a good amount. That wouldn't be fair to say she didn't get a lot of screen time, but she didn't get as much as them. The narrative didn't focus as much on her as it did them. And still to be able to shine is very commendable. And then I look the other way, and Poor Things is a vehicle that is completely driven by Emma Stone's performance. You know, it's one of those things where the other actors and people in it, like William Dafoe and Mark Ruffalo, they're great in it and they're there, but it's like one of those where it's just, it really is just almost, it's 90 to 10 her performance that really makes this character what it is, makes the journey what it is and everything like that. So on that end, I can understand somebody looking at it and going from just a pure acting standpoint and what she had to do to carry the movie, she deserves it. So it's one of those things, like I see both sides. It's like, if I'm in a room and two people are arguing about it, I couldn't take either person's side. I would probably just wind up agreeing with both of their points and not really siding either way. That's how close this was to me. And that's how either or this was to me. So yeah, I totally get the sentiment and where you're coming from. Nobody got robbed, but Yeah, it would have been nice. And yeah, and Lily was our early favorite going into all of this. So yeah, you know, it would have been nice, but I'm not mad either way.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, like this award season too was, it did feel like people were just happy for people this award, which is good. Like I think about too with, I mean, you see when Emma wins her award that Lily Gladstone is sitting there, she's just like over the moon and she's so happy for her. You know what I mean? And she kind of gave her a little bit of a shout out too, you know, of like, you know, I'm just sharing this award with you. And then I think about, Sterling K. Brown being nominated for American Fiction, like even in interviews before this, he was like going around being like, I'm not going to win. I am 100% aware that I'm not going to win. He's like, it's going to be Robert Downey Jr. I know that. And I'm fine with that. I have no doubt in my mind that it's not me, but I'm just happy to be nominated. Like I'm with a crazy caliber of other talent and I'm fine with it. You know, and so it's just really nice to see that. And of course, they always, you know, try to promote that being the atmosphere at these awards and stuff like that. But I don't know. I feel like you just really, I don't know. I feel like you just really, you felt it and you felt the genuineness of it, in my opinion, this time around. So, yeah, it was just nice to see it. And like, yeah, I was happy with a non-dramatic, for the most part, Oscars. Actually, I don't really know that there was any dramatic moments really this year. So just a very, this is what it is. And, you know, it felt more like the classier Oscars that we've been wanting for a while, you know, but yeah, it was worth it. But yeah, I think, I'm just trying to think if there's anything Oscar related that we didn't really talk about last week, but I think it was really just the Poor Thing. I mean, Poor Things won, like, I think costume design, right? It won a couple of other things as well. Which it does suck because another problem is I'm actually just sad that Killers of the Flower Moon won nothing, came away with absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And that's really sad and bums me out. But on the other hand, you know, Poor Things won, I think, five or six awards, I think. And a lot of them were like costume and things like that. Maybe makeup, something like that. They won a lot of these like technical and like, you know, those types of awards. So, yeah, which was good. I mean, I feel like Poor Things and Oppenheimer seemed to come away with the most of the ones that they were nominated for.
Yeah, that was kind of the way that it shaped out. So, and that's the thing, like, you thought that it would be a little more spread just because there were so many good movies and high quality movies. So you just thought that maybe some of those awards would kind of get spread a little more throughout the films. But yeah, it just seemed like the voters sort of just kind of zoned in on those two in particular, and just those just, I guess, won them over more than the others. And it's crazy, but it's crazy though, because the margin almost is not representative. Like the margin of Oscar wins that those two movies received versus the others is really not representative of just how close, in my mind, a lot of the movies were in quality. Like I really, really believe that. Like Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer, I really feel that those movies, whether you liked one more or disliked the other one more, I feel like the movies are very close in quality. You know, they're like just very, very superbly acted, well-made films about real events and real people that happen to them and stuff like that. You know, very different style directors, but the quality, like the scale at which they created those films, you could just, It was very high quality just from both of those films from top to bottom. Or like I look at a film like Anatomy of the Fall. I loved Anatomy of the Fall. I thought it was such a well-written movie, but so was, oh my gosh, the movie with Sterling K. Brown,
American Fiction.
Yes. American Fiction. Well, I don't know why I wanted to say American Justice. I don't know why I was thinking justice, but no, like American Fiction, those were just such superbly written films. Just the story and the dialogue from top to bottom, I just thought was top notch. So even though when somebody looks at a list of who won the awards this year and they see all that Oppenheimer and they see all that Poor Things, it almost just doesn't do the other films justice as far as just how good they were. And then you think about a movie like Barbie, you know, like didn't win much, but still was a great film that came out this past year. So, yeah, man, it's just crazy how it's going to look on paper is almost not reflective of the quality of films this year.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. But anywho. Any other thoughts on the Oscars or anybody's wins, losses, etc.?
I think we about covered it between this recording and last recording.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else, except I don't remember if I said this in the last one, but I really would love it if they let John Mulaney host the Oscars next year because he's very funny.
Yeah, that segment that he had was great. So he might be somebody. And I mean, he got a standing ovation after he did that. And he was very funny and witty. And that was just a very good moment at the Oscars. And it had some funny moments. You know, I think we covered John Cena, or we talked a little bit about Ryan Gosling and singing and everything. So, you know, there were a lot of solid, just entertaining moments as well. So more of those people and more of that stuff, please. So, yes.
Yeah.
And with that being said, why don't we segue to that music?
Oh, yeah.
Cinema Slayers. Hey, Cine fans, it is your resident wrestler, yes, sir, Jastin Taylor, and I am joined by the First Lady of Cinema Slayers, Heather. And as we alluded to earlier, Sterling will not be on this one. We're going to miss one more week of him, but he will be back for what I'm sure is going to wind up being one of his favorite movies this year, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, because we all know how much he loves Ghostbusters. So I'm almost guaranteeing he's going to love it. And if that wasn't sarcastic enough for you, segueing from that, we are going to talk about everything that we like, dislike, and everything in between with Poor Things. So as I said earlier, this is the movie that Emma Stone won the Oscar for. So we're going to get into it. We're going to analyze it. We're going to do some non-spoiler talk. We're going to do some recommendations and scores, and then finally lead into our spoiler section. So with that being said, Heather, what are some non-spoilery things you liked about Poor Things?
Yeah. So I was hesitant a little bit going into this movie because my understanding was, you know, it's basically like Frankenstein in a way, sort of, you know, but like a young woman. But then, you know, you really find out that it's not just a young woman, but it's basically a child, a baby that's growing into a woman that, you know, a baby that's put into this woman's body. So it was a weird concept for me. And I was like, you really have to kind of tread lightly or carefully with that because just of the subject matter of a lot of what happens in this movie. And so I was a little bit nervous about how they were going to handle it. But I do have to say, as much as I still feel like, oh, there were some parts that I was like, ugh, it's a little too close to borderline too weird for me with some of the concepts. But I think that a lesser movie would have made it worse. It would have made it to where I was like, I don't like this movie. But because of how they handled it and because of the themes of this movie and the performances of this movie, I did end up really enjoying this movie. I think that it's interesting because you had mentioned this in the earlier segment that, I mean, Emma Stone is basically this entire movie sort of rides on her performance, which is 100% true, because especially given what she has to do and like the type of character that she has to play. If you don't do it the right way, everything falls flat in this movie. Everything about this movie doesn't work if you don't have that performance that really makes it work. You know what I mean? I feel like just it's such a primal, very important part of the story to have this character that you're just like, you relate to her, like you want to watch her learning and growing into these new things that she's learning about her own life and her own feelings and her own desires and emotions. And, you know, you're invested at that point and you need to be, because this story is just like, it kind of makes you have to draw on relating and caring about her character, I think. You know what I mean? So I think she did such a great job. Like, I mean, just everything about what she did from the time that she starts out, and you can tell she's still learning words and growing and things like that, to sort of how she progresses throughout the entire film. And some really funny moments that are very like dry humor moments that I appreciate, that I know we'll get more into because it kind of revolves around like the plot of the movie. But I mean, yeah, she carries this movie. Like, this entire movie is Bella Baxter, you know, like it is completely her. And I will say Mark Ruffalo, I kind of loved his character because he's such a baby. He is such a baby, and he does it so well because he wants to pretend like he's this, you know, very, you know, upper class, like he's very pretentious. He comes across very like self-important and things like that. And he's very charming and gets his way easily. And then events that happen in this movie just turn him into this complete mess of a man. And it's just so funny to watch him like devolve into that. And his chemistry and dynamic with Emma Stone is so good in this movie. And it's, I mean, if we're being honest, a lot of these characters and a lot of these scenes are very like, you have to really like, they're very intimate scenes. So you have to really make that intimacy work emotionally, physically, all of that. And yeah, you just really have to be careful and tread lightly, but also make it seem seamless at the same time for this movie to work. Like, they towed that line so perfectly though, to where you got it. You understood what they were doing and you could roll with it, you know? So it's just, again, like a lesser movie would have completely messed this up and would have completely just made this a garbage fire. Like, it just, the way everything was written, everything was acted, and just how they shot the movie, everything was so well done. And also, I mean, visually, come on, this movie is whimsy and eccentric and beautiful to look at. And it's very fitting with what this movie's about. It's very fitting with the character of Bella. Like, you feel like everything you're seeing, like all the beauty surrounding you, you're just like, you feel like it's evolving and you're appreciating the beauty of it as it goes on, the way that you're appreciating the character of Bella, if that makes sense. It's kind of, it feels like they kind of go hand in hand with what you're seeing on screen. So I appreciated that. And it was just cool to kind of make that connection with it. So yeah, I think this movie was really good. Better than I expected, which is weird because I did only hear very good things about it, but just the subject matter, I was like, how are they going to handle this? And they handled it well, you know, again, still some parts that were a little bit iffy, you know, just things that, you know, a little bit, what's the word? Like taboo could have been, you know, considered, you know, pretty taboo if not handled better. So yes, but overall, I think it worked. I think most of the things they did with this movie worked. And I love sort of the life lessons that you learn from this along with Bella from beginning to end.
Yeah. I think that because when I heard about this movie, I don't really remember seeing too many previews about it or anything like that. I don't remember if I saw a preview of this where I was like watching a preview and was like, oh, I want to see that. I don't really remember if that happened to me or not. Really, I caught on to this movie just because of the award buzz it was getting and people were just raving about it. So it kind of, it was one of those movies where it had that reputation and I caught wind of it because of the reputation it had. And then whenever we sort of made the decision, well, let's try to review as many of these as we can so that we can at least talk about how we, what we thought of Best Picture and some of these awards and stuff. So whenever we kind of made that sort of a mission for us for the next few episodes, I was like, oh, okay, you know, I'll get to check this out and see what it is. And I've always been a fan of Emma Stone. I think that she's, you know, I thought she was a good actress. And then, you know, she had some movies come out. You know, I finally saw Easy A and what's the one with, I keep forgetting the movies that these people are in, but the musical with her and Ryan Gosling.
La La Land.
La La Land.
Yeah.
And I thought she was wonderful in that. And so it was, yeah, it was always one of those things where, and she's just been real consistent. I feel like she's one of those actresses where even when I first started watching her, she's always been consistent. And I always thought that she was good. And I think a performance like this is kind of what separates you from the, these are the kinds of performances that separate the good from the decent to the great, in my opinion. These are kind of one of those movies where you look at a person's acting and you go, okay, so this, she's, it's kind of, what is that? How does that saying go? There are levels to this. And definitely to me, if you ask me, this is one of those performances where you're like, damn, there are levels to this. And she is on that level, man. Yeah. I think I just have to give her her flowers. Like, those are the kind of kudos I want to give her for this. One, the lady that was at the Oscars that was talking about her nomination and talking about her as a person said that this performance was fearless. And I almost think that that is the best word to probably describe this performance. I totally got what she meant when after, because I saw the Oscars before I saw Poor Things, but after seeing Poor Things, I remembered that. I remembered one of those celebrities standing up there and saying,
was it Sally Field?
I think it maybe, I think Sally it was Field. Sally Field.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was her. And yeah. And I just remember her saying her performance was fearless. And I went, I know why she said that now.
Yeah.
Like, I know why she, because I mean,
very vulnerable for this
exactly.
performance.
Yeah. Extremely vulnerable, like not even just to get the vulnerability of the character, but she also had to just like, I mean, what this film asked her to do, like, you know, without trying to spoil anything, there is constant nudity in this film. There is constant sex in this film and body discovery and talks about different things. And it's all, and the thing is that, so, I mean, obviously if you're a person that's bothered by that, if you're one of those people that's like, I don't, you know, and there are those people where they're in these movies and they're like, oh, why all the nudity? Why all the sex and stuff like that? I might see that maybe being, I could see how that could be a turnoff for some people, but I feel that the reason why the performance is fearless is because it almost was a requirement for this kind of character who's growing and developing and discovering herself and discovering her sexuality and discovering how she feels and experience in life. So this character had to uncompromisingly so experience all these things so that we could understand her development and understand where her mindset is by the time we go through the journey. So not only did Emma Stone, not only was she required to kind of play this in an uncompromising way, it also had to be shot in an uncompromising way. Because if the camera is purposely censoring, then I think it kind of takes away from sort of the uncensored way in which we wanted this character to like experience and receive life, if that makes sense. So it all had to match the way it had to be shot. What I mean is not like cinematography, but what they had to show had to match what the character was seeing and experiencing so we could understand what she was understanding. So it all had to match. And so I'm imagining an actress reading this script, and I just don't think there are a lot of actresses that would have just done this, would have just gone this far and would have just been like doing some of the things. And we'll talk about some of these things in detail, but doing some of the things she was required to do. So I know a lot of times we throw around that phrase of, oh, I couldn't see another actor or actress playing this part. Well, I'm telling you now, you know, there's a lot of times we say that, but this probably is definitely one of those.
One of those more true ones.
Yeah. I mean, don't know if many actresses I know would have attacked this as uncompromisingly as she did. I just feel like some other actresses might have compromised. Hell, I'm saying actresses, some men, I don't think could have been able to do this.
I mean, that's a really good way to put it. Just very uncompromising. Yeah. I mean, and you talk about people that like they put their all into a role and they, you know, getting, you know, accommodations, acknowledgement for it. I mean, she put her all into this. You could tell she did. I mean, this is absolutely sides of Emma Stone I've never seen before. Like, you know,
we mean all of the all. We're not talking about, oh, she tried hard. Boy, it was more than
Emma
that.
We know very intimately now. Yes. But
yeah,
I mean, but I remember also like, I want to say it was her Golden Globe speech or something where she kind of referred to this. I think she called this a love story because she said that it was Bella just falling in love with life, you know? And I kind of like the way that she put that because it sort of makes you understand a little bit more what they were trying to do with this movie when you put it that way of just learning experiences for yourself and coming to conclusions about yourself and other people just based off of like, I'm just solely experiencing these things and based off of my experience, this is what I've come to the conclusion of, whether it's partners or places you live or jobs you have or whatever it is, like you kind of get a little bit of that here, you know, in all of those aspects. So I just kind of, I really appreciate that she put it that way of, you know, it's basically like Bella falling in love with life. That's what this movie is.
Yeah, that's a great point. And for the other actors and actresses and people that Bella meets and things like that, you have to understand that this is a character, that she is a character that is not bound by a lot of the societal norms and things and sort of pressures that we are bound by. So it makes a lot of these situations funny because she's not going to say the thing that a person with manners would say, you know,
polite she's not society, going, as they called it in the movie.
Polite society, as they called it in the movie. She's not going to say the polite thing all the time. She's going to say what she feels and express her feelings because she hasn't been taught suppression and when not to say something nice or when not to say what you feel or when not to say when a person is annoying you. Like none of that really exists in this character.
Which is so really nice. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, which it's something that I love most about this movie is just kind of getting to see how her mind gets to where it does with what she concludes about things, you know, just kind of processing outwardly how she's feeling about things. It was just a really interesting and cool thing that they did in this movie because you're, you know, just the very logical way that she's thinking about things, but also understanding a little bit more at a time, emotion and things like that, that come along being more of a complex person basically. And so, yeah, I love those scenes where she's just making a conclusion about something based off an experience that she just had. And you're seeing in real time, like the opinion that she's forming about it, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. All of that, you can just kind of see in how she thinks and how she analyzes. And because there's no real filter to what she learns or what she experiences or her expressing how she thinks and things like and reacting to different people, it's just great to see. And sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's thought provoking. Sometimes you're just like, wow. And it's very relatable because sometimes you can think about yourself and your own development in situations. And you think about how you felt and how similar it was, or when you discovered things about yourself and how like, and how she looks at it. So some of it is relatable and some of it, you look at her and go, man, maybe I should have said how I felt in that situation or something like that. You know, where would my life be if I could just be as free as this person, you know? And there's this real thing about like, I'm kind of getting into spoiler territory, but I'll kind of try to generalize it. But there's this real thing about her going to all these places and all these different people almost trying to keep her in this place or capture her, keep her and make her stay and everything like that. And it's almost like she is the most free person, free character in this, as far as just what she thinks and how she analyzes and how she learns. But everything around her, you can see how all these people around her are more like us and how we are and what we've been influenced by and things like that. So it's almost like you've got this free person versus like all of these schools and thoughts and men and people surrounding her, trying to influence her. And so it's really like interesting to see just where this character arrives and that journey that it takes. And it really does kind of not only teach you something about the Bella character, but I think it can also teach you something about yourself and your perspective and things like that. So to me, it's a very versatile movie in that way. It's got the funny stuff. It's fun, but it's so weird and quirky and abstract, kind of like what you were talking about, Heather, especially like the way it looks, the way it's shot. You know, we'll randomly have a scene shot normally, but then we'll be following behind somebody and we're going through all these different rooms or we're seeing the viewpoint almost as if we're looking through a telescope. And then there are just will randomly be scenes shot like that. And so like, it's very interesting how abstract and kind of open and even the color palette, sometimes the sky is just a different color, like, you know, a color it can't possibly be, but it just is. And sometimes we're black and white and sometimes we're not, but it didn't feel ever like it was being artsy just for the sake of being artsy. This is one of those few movies where it felt like it all just fit, like you said, the mindset of this character and what this character was experiencing and sort of the free yeah. nature that this character has. So it's shot very freely in that yeah. way.
Which I feel like that's part of why it goes from black and white to color as you see more of, you know, Bella developing and seeing the world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. Because, yeah, it starts with like some very and even her views, you could argue, in the first stages of her development are very black and white. Like, you know, this is God. This is what I should be doing. This is what I shouldn't be doing. You know, it's very black and white until she discovers things for herself. So, yeah, I think that's a very good observation. But anyway, not to ramble too long in the non-spoiler section, because, you know me, I would do that. But yeah, I found this. I'll wrap it up here. I found it just very enjoyable. I think it's a very good movie, and I think it had some strong messages, and it is a strong journey. And in a way, it's kind of unique because it very much is a coming of age Frankenstein story with a woman and
more heart. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of that is just that's a unique smorgasbord cornucopia of things. But to me, it all comes together and it all works, and you get some great performances to boot. So, yeah, I thought it was a very an unexpected joy. I thought this film was.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, are we ready to go to recommendations and scores?
You know it.
Recommendations and scores.
All right. I guess it's my turn again, so yeah. I'll try to make it quick since I just had the floor. Yeah, it's going to be a recommend for me. Like we said, with the caveat that if you're a person who, I guess, likes your movies clean in the sense that, you know, you don't like a lot of, and I know there are people out there, there are people out there that they don't like a lot of sex in their movies. They don't like a lot of nudity in their movies and everything like that. And regardless of if it has a point or not, they just don't like the content, period. So I will throw that out there. This has plenty of that. So if that is something that makes you uncomfortable, then maybe I could see that not sitting well with you. So, you know, if you don't have the stomach for that, I will respect that. But really, I just recommend it because I think everything, all the subject matter that it has, I saw the point of it. It didn't feel like this was egregious or this was some director who likes Emma Stone and was just trying to capture her naked whenever he could or anything like that. You know, it didn't feel, none of it felt malicious in that way. Like,
yeah, it wasn't really like gratuitous.
Felt,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Gratuitous in that way. It really felt like they had a point and they had a message and they did it this way because it served that purpose. And by the time I got to the end, I felt that it did. So I would recommend it if you're looking for just something a little different. Like we said, a coming of age Frankenstein story with a woman. I mean, doesn't that sound intriguing? Like, doesn't that right. sound unlike anything that came out this year. And it's so quirky and weird and just so eccentric. And I get that that's not everybody's flavor, but I just found it so compelling because it was just so different from the other movies that I saw this year. So if you're looking for different, man, if you're looking for something that might challenge the eyes a little bit and challenge you as far as thought and just challenge some of these genres and these Frankenstein movies and these sort of these growing, developing, coming of age characters that you normally see. Well, this is definitely one that's different from what you normally see. So I think I can recommend it for those reasons. It's unique, it's colorful, and it is a well-made film with good acting performances. So I can recommend it for those reasons. And I think for a score, we are going to go with, I'll give it 93. We'll give it 93 belching gas bubbles out of 100.
Nice. Yeah, I would use that same warning as far as recommendation for it because, yeah, there's a lot of sex and just the context in which, you know, it's had, but also just knowing the character of Emma Stone and like who she plays in this movie as far as why there is that sex in there. It can be a little bit hard to digest, like, you know, merging the character of Bella with these actions that she's doing just based off of, you know, things that we'll talk about. But yeah, I think, I do think it is good. I do think it has some, it does have really good underlying messages to it. I think it, yeah, it's got hints of just empowerment to it in a way, I would say. And just kind of helps you in some ways just be like, is this how I should have been looking at life the whole time? Like, is this the lens in which I should see the world in this very beautiful way of just wanting to experience anything that I can in the world? And you know what I mean? It's a really lovely thought, and the way that she approaches it with this kind of endearing and, you know, oddly wholesome, even in spite of what she does, wholesome way, you know, just kind of her mentality with it is, it's really interesting and it's a lovely thought, you know what I mean? And even moments when you know, like she's not seeing the full scope of what the world can be yet, you just know that, I don't know, you just still see those moments of her having hope, even after she does see some things that she learns about the world, you know? And also, I don't want to forget to mention Willem Dafoe, who was really great in this too. And super shout out to Rami Youssef, who plays Max McCandles, because I've never seen that dude in anything in my life, but my understanding is that he's a stand-up comedian. And that dude was great.
He was great.
His character was great. The way he performed the character was great. I would love to see him in more stuff. Maybe I need to check out his stand-up comedy. I don't know, but I really, really liked his character a lot. And I was just, I think I was surprised just because the only thing I knew about him is that he was a comedian. So I was just like, interesting choice. Okay. And then you just see him do his thing and you're like, yeah, this 100% works. Like he was so good. So yeah, just a shout out to them because they were really great performances as well. But yeah, I think there's some really great things to learn from this movie. And I think it's just, it's, you're not going to see anything else like it. You know, even the concept of it, yeah, it's Frankenstein, but just redone as like a female and whatever. It's still just the way it's shot and the types of lessons that you're learning. Like it's just different than anything else. So it stands out in that way. It's very unique. And it is kind of, I guess in that way, kind of a masterpiece because you're just like, when are you going to like see and just have a movie put together this way where the idea of it, you're just like, this is so odd. Like, I don't know what to do with this. And then you go in with that mentality and you come out being like, I'm empowered as a person, you know, like, how do you do that? You know, that's great filmmaking in a way. So yeah, I mean, there are still some things in it that I probably would have liked to have been done differently, but for the most part, yeah, I think it's a unique and interesting film, and it's definitely worth giving a shot at least once to see it. If you're Jastin, you have to at least see it twice, but in general,
exactly.
Seeing it once is, I think it would be a really good idea, you know, and unless, you know, seeing a lot of sex is something that you can't do, or you're opposed to seeing, and it makes you uncomfortable, or you're just not into movies like that, probably avoid this one because there's just a lot of it throughout the entire movie. So, but yeah, I do recommend it. I think I'm going to give it 83 emergency funds that you don't use until way past the time you should have used it out of 100.
All right. And we did have some thoughts from Sterling. Did you want to read those on his behalf?
Yes, I could do that. Sterling's thoughts are, in a nutshell, liked it, didn't love it. There were too many needlessly weird things that detracted from the movie's themes and story. But overall, he ended up giving it 80 tattooed older women out of 100. So we'll take that.
Okay. So that gives us a 93 plus, you said, an 83.
Yep, and an 80.
So the overall CineScore for this movie is 85.
Nice. Solid. It's pretty solid.
Not too shabby.
All right.
All right. We ready for spoiler talk?
We're ready. Here we go.
Spoilers.
I'm the master of these sounds now. I just feel like I can do anything now.
Yeah, now he can just pass that off to you now. Now you got it down now. Well, I went first for that last section, so I guess it's back to you. So, yeah, give us some of your spoiler thoughts and whatnot, Heather. What stood out to you about this film?
Yeah, and I mean, obviously chime in whenever you want. But
yes,
for me, I know that, like, I kind of get what Sterling does mean about the kind of like just some weird things that they put in. And it kind of alludes to what you put for your score too, because I remember on an offline conversation that all of us had, Sterling mentioned the whole, like, you know, when Willem Dafoe like belches and there's just like this bubble that comes out and just like really like random things like that throughout the movie. So I do get what he means about that. And that's part of like the whimsical nature of the film. But I mean, and to be fair, like, I appreciate the entire idea of, you know, Bella is coming into her own and she's experiencing things and learning how she feels about them just firsthand. The only thing that is still a little bit like awkward about the whole thing to me is the fact that she has a child's brain. I mean, essentially it was like an infant's brain to start, right? Because, you know, what happens is this woman jumps off of a cliff or a bridge and, you know, tries to unalive herself, and she does, but the baby lives. And so Willem Dafoe's character comes and takes the baby's brain and puts it into the woman's body and creates essentially a Frankenstein situation. So, you know, and it's an odd concept that it takes some getting used to. And there's still, even when you're more used to it, there's just some parts that are a little bit harder to swallow. Like the fact that this person, and who knows how quickly the brain is really developing. I don't know if they really say, do they? I mean,
they didn't really.
Yeah. They talk about like, oh, her hair grows like 2 inches a day and stuff like that. So obviously, like, there's fast development here from what he's created. I don't remember Willem Dafoe's character's name, but what he's created, you know, it's obviously like fast development. So, but there are some moments and some scenes in this movie where, you know, Emma Stone's character, Bella, is learning what self-pleasure is and things like that. And I feel like her brain isn't fully developed in a way of where it would be a normal age to be exploring that stuff. And maybe that's just me. I could be wrong because they're not super clear on how quickly the brain is developing, but especially based off of just the speech and her still struggling with speech and things like that at times, it just made me feel like she was still very much younger in her brain. So that was a little bit odd to me. And that's probably the part that I would have changed about the movie, just because I just feel like that's, I just, that kind of irks me a little bit or gives me a weird ick in a way that it's somebody so young, you know what I mean? That doesn't know so much more about the world and that's something they're already experiencing and exploring. But again, I don't really know what the development age of her brain was at the time. So, but just kind of the way it's portrayed feels like, I feel like it just seems like a child learning masturbation. And that was weird to me. But beyond that, I mean, and even beyond that too, I mean, she's learning what sex is and she's having sex with people and things like that too. I feel like she's a little bit older when that starts, if I remember right. But yeah, it's just, it's hard to tell and say just because of the timeline of things they're not clear on. But that aside, I enjoy the idea of, I'm just going to try this out. I'd like to see what happens. I just want to know what this feels like or what this looks like or whatever for myself, you know? And like, even those moments when, I mean, if you want a friend that you feel is just going to be the least judgmental friend of your entire life, it's going to be Bella Baxter. Cause she's just very like, okay, cool. I get it. Like, just like,
yeah.
She's like, okay, you know, I want to marry Max, but also this guy, what was his name? What was Mark Ruffalo's character's name? He had like this really like pretentious name.
Oh, sorry. Duncan Wetterbum.
Duncan. Yeah. And like, you know, she's just like, I'd like to marry Max because I think he'd be really good for marriage. But before then, I'd like to just play around and explore and have fun with Duncan. Like, just very matter of fact, very like, I realize that he's not someone I'd like to marry that would be good for marriage, but I'd still like to see what that is before I get married. Like, just very like these logical, very self-aware type of mentality that she has with some of these things, which I just appreciated because the way that she's saying them and the way the script is written too, because I feel like it's just a testament to a well-written script of just like very logical things that she says in a way where you're like, yeah, take most of the emotion out of what you're saying. And that's exactly what it is. And that makes sense for her character too, because she doesn't know emotions yet or understand emotions yet. So she's just saying the thing that her brain knows. Like, she's putting together the pieces of, okay, this is what makes sense of what I'm putting together. And that's what she's running with. And even when she's exploring sex more, she's understanding, oh, this feels good. This is pleasure. But she's not understanding that relationships are complicated and what that means. And she's just like, oh, well, yeah, I had sex with this guy, but I can have sex with you now and it's fine. And, you know, it's just completely destroying these men around her that are like, no, I just want you for myself. And, you know, it's just,
yeah,
it's just like this funny, just difference complete of the roles reversed, where you feel like typically it's the powerful person in the situation that's feeling that way. But it's the powerful people that are like, no, like it is an ego thing still, because they're just like, it's hurting their ego that she's not like, oh, I only want you, you know? Cause I mean, you can even tell with Duncan, Mark Ruffalo, where he's like, it would probably be good if you don't fall in love with me, you know, like that whole thing. And then she's like, no worries, it's fine. And then he's mad about it, like, because he apparently loves her. And, you know, it just, and I don't even know, maybe you feel differently, but I don't really know that he loved her. I think he just loved the challenge. I think he liked the fact that she was the only person not just falling at his feet all the time, you know, but I don't think at all that he actually loved her. He just loved the idea of somebody not like anybody else. You know what I mean? I don't know, but yeah, it's interesting, but I don't know. I feel like, I enjoy just the things that she learns along the way, even in like her relationships with people, like with Duncan, you know, at one point when she's like, I used to think differently of you. I used to have a better opinion of you, and now I don't. Like, you've actually annoyed me, and I just don't think that will work anymore. Just the way that she says any of these like very blunt things is so funny, because it's like, she's not wrong in anything that she's saying here, but you just don't expect it so bluntly from somebody who could be so removed emotionally from the situation, you know, especially with the stigma of it usually being females that are overly emotional, you know? So it's just funny to see that from her, you know, and then her just being like, no, I want to learn. I want to grow. I want to do these things. And even when she ends up going to the house to do prostitution, and she's just like, I get it logically. I need money right now. Sex is good. You know, why not? Like, she's just very like making these logical connect the dot things where you're just like, that's how she's viewing it, you know? And it's like, if you take the emotion out of anything, or like the preconceived ideas or the prejudgments that people have of certain situations out, you remove that factor, and that's how you should probably be viewing it, you know? And I'm not saying go around and do prostitution or anything like that, but I'm also saying, yeah, think about circumstantial situations, or just think about like maybe the reason that other people do it is the same reason that she logically came to that conclusion. You know what I mean? Like, it was just a really cool thing to just be like, no, these things in my head make sense. Like, you want to give me money for something that I enjoy doing anyway. Why would I not do it? You know? And it's still kind of in a way like the innocent childlike mentality, just because she hasn't experienced the world and like the stigma that comes with prostitution and things like that. But it's just really interesting. And even meeting those people on the boat, I'm forgetting the guy's name, but that guy, he was a good character, but just even him, when he's just like, you want to see what the world's really like? I'll show you what it's like. And just, it destroys her, you know? But
yeah,
at the same time, she's just like, she wants to do something about it. And I love that in her logical brain. I mean, that was the first time when you see her have emotion about anything, but you know, she's looking out at all these people that are just so poor and all these things out below them. And like, I love that getting that emotion. It didn't make her be like, well, sucks for them. And like the logical mentality with that, it made her actually be like, well, they're poor. We need to help them. Like, just somebody with a very logical brain that's not overly emotional, still coming to the conclusion that you should help people in need. And I just love that. I love that that was her conclusion that she came to, and that she was like, you know, I have all this money. I have all these things. I have so many things here, and they have nothing. Like, that's not fair. And she hated that. And, you know, you just see that people can just really have good hearts. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what their history of things are, what their past is, you know, beliefs or whatever they identify with, they could just be good people. Like, and I love that idea of her learning that in her own way through experiencing her first strong emotion. So I don't know. It was just really, really cool to see that. And, you know, just the progression of her reading more, and he's like, why are you reading all the time? And, you know, you slowly hear her language and her speech become better as she's learning and growing in her knowledge of things. And I think that was really great too. You know, so there's just so many really great things, and they're subtle enough to where you're still on this journey. You're still just like, you're rooting for her still. You're just like, oh, yay, look at her speech. It's so much better now. And like, oh, she knows what this word is. And look at her reading all these things. And you know, you're just like, you're on her side because she's like a self-taught person in most ways. And you just love to see it because you're just like, awesome. Like, these are not things that you did or thought because you were told to think them or do them. They're things that you just discovered. That's how you felt about them by experiencing them. And I feel like that is just the main through line of this movie. And it's just told in a lovely way of somebody who could very easily be jaded because they don't have emotions of things, but instead they're choosing to see, like, look at the simple little things. Like, I love this world, you know? And I love even that line at the end when she's like super upset learning what happened and like how she was created and things like that. But she was like, I love being alive. So, you know, I'm going to forgive the offense because I love being alive. And I just loved that line because you don't actually hear people a lot these days say that, where they're just like, I just love being alive. And just through all of the life that she experienced in it, I don't know, was it a year? I don't even know how long she was away from home. It was a while.
Yeah, it was a while.
But I mean,
I don't think they ever said how long. Yeah, though.
But she was there and like experienced life just in that. It might have been a long time she was away, but in that short time in her own life, how much she learned and grew. And like, it was just really beautiful to see that play out on the screen and just her mentality. And she didn't know fear, which was crazy. That's a crazy thought, to like not know what fear is. She was standing up to these people and doing these things that most people would be scared of. And, you know, when she's confronted with her ex, not her ex, but typically the person whose body she's in, ex, you know, essentially the dad, which is weird. But even when she's faced with him, she's not afraid. He's very threatening and terrifying, but she's not afraid. Like, she doesn't know fear. She's just logically like, well, this is dumb. Like, you know, and thinks on her feet of ways to get out of situations and things like that. I don't know. It's a really lovely thing to just see that be who our main character is. And that's how she handles things. And it just really makes you think about how differently would we look at the world and our own lives if we didn't have these ingrained different emotions or things in us already of, I should be afraid of this person, or I should be afraid of this thing, or, you know, I should feel ashamed of this thing, or whatever it is. And she doesn't have any of that. She's just like, no, like, life is experiencing things. That's how you know what you like and you don't like. And that's how you live. And it was just really cool. So that's what I have for now, but I'm gonna let you go for a little bit.
Yeah. And I like where you came to that conclusion about life being experiencing things. And that really is a big, big part of this movie. But like, even going back to the beginning, like where, like we were talking, where everything is black and white, and she's referring to Dr. Baxter as God, and just, you know, calling him God and everything like that. And, you know, this is the person who created me. So this is a person who's God and everything. And like, you know, and when you're hearing the references to God and kind of how he was sheltering her and everything, it's interesting. You could go the religious route with it, but you could also go the parental route with it, because when we are little, our parents are pretty much like our gods, you know, whoever our guardians are, they're the ones telling us right from wrong. They're the ones
controlling.
Yeah. They set the tone. They control what we do, what we think. That they're the ones kind of protecting us and telling us where we can and cannot go, keeping us from things and things like that. So it made sense that she would be in this situation and would think that this person is God. Like, this is the highest person that I know. This is my creator. This is the person who is my guardian, in charge of me, everything like that. And even though we don't call our parents gods, in a way it's a similar thing, you know, the value that we put on that and them and their perspective and things like that. And I just love how it goes from that to her wanting to go out and see the world and wanting to gain her own experiences and gain perspective. And even though the doctor fought that for a little bit, you know, like a parent often has to do the hard thing of letting the child go and go out and become an adult, gain that experience and knowledge and things like that. I even saw some similar dynamics with that, with her and the doctor and everything like that. And even just kind of not even telling her the entire truth about where she came from and who the father. And I mean, you hear stories like that all the time sometimes, like when you talk to other people in their families and stuff and how certain things were kept from them, from kids, until the parents feel like it's time to tell them and things like that, or things you wind up discovering about your family or people that you didn't even realize happened and stuff like that. So, you know, even there's even an inkling of that, just like with Bella's development. And I get what you were saying about just on some of the like sexual developments and her discovering her body and everything like that. I guess I roll with it because yes, you do have an infant brain, but you do also have an adult body. So some of those biological like tendencies and wants and things that she would be feeling would, I guess, in a way juxtapose with an infant brain. So there is sort of this gray area of how would an infant brain process being in an adult? You know what I mean? Because because it's an infant brain, but it's an adult body. So the urges that I get as a man, how would an infant brain process that? Other than just to feel it and say, oh shit, I feel this right now and that's what I'm going to do. Or I feel, you know, it's such a weird thing to try to analyze it logically. I mean, I guess really you could argue this can't happen anyway, but I'm trying to imagine how difficult of a ordeal that would be. If you are a child in an adult body, there would be so many things that you would be feel that adult body would be doing and developing and feeling and things like that. And you in a child brain almost wouldn't even be able to comprehend a lot of what you're feeling and stuff. So it's kind of a weird juxtaposition in that way too. Also the movie doesn't do the best job of establishing time. Like we've talked about, we don't know how much time is passing or how much we know she's developing, but it's not like it's saying 2 years later, 3 years later, you know, it's not giving you that information. All you know is that Bella is developing. So that also makes it a little murky too on like, okay, so at what point was she? It's almost like you're just watching her develop, watching her actions and sort of guessing where her, the age of where her brain is. But at the same time, like I said, it's all kind of jumbled up because we're in an adult body feeling adult things at times. So it is just a weird place to be. But going with it, I do like how you saw all the different stages for the most part. You saw her almost in these infantile stages where she could barely really walk and hardly had use of motor skills and barely developing and learning words and things like that. And you kind of saw the progression. And I think that's also the strength of Emma Stone's acting, because to be able to portray all these different developments and to be able to move differently, to act differently, even the way she reacted to things was different when you look at mature Bella versus early stage Bella, where she's experiencing things and kind of the wonderment that she had. And then as she matures, it becomes this other thing where you see the wheels turning and she's trying to think about all these different viewpoints that she's hearing and racking her brain about what is the truth. Like you see all of that in Emma Stone's performance. So there really is layers to it. It's not as simple as she was just tasked with, okay, you're going to be kind of act like a kid in these scenes, and then here you're going to act like a teen, then here you're going to act like... It's way more nuanced than that. And you almost have to see the performance to truly understand, like, how I'm describing it, because there are all of these just real nuances in the performance in that way. Yeah. Like, and so, you know, you're going along with this story and she's discovering herself and everything. And like you said, just the blunt way that she puts things and how she just says, well, I do think that he is somebody that I want to marry, but this is something I want to do too. I don't think that, that Duncan has my best interests at heart, but I am curious and I do want to have, and I do want to have some adventures and I do want to have fun.
Things so that just, people would never want to admit to anybody, but she's just
exactly.
like, this is how I feel. So here it is, you know?
Exactly. And you think about you, like, and it's crazy because sometimes you can even think about your own life, and sometimes you could tell when a person maybe you wonder if this person really has your best interests at heart, or is it all about them, or are they all just really being selfish, or if is it just something that they, or do they just want something out of you, whether it's support, you know, whether it's friends, family members, acquaintances, you know. These are all questions that we often ask ourselves, or maybe we think these things on the inside, but we don't express them for whatever reason, or we ride it out, or we have to see more, or whatever the case may be. And it's just a real lesson in how so many of our societal norms and our polite society, as they put it, has sort of made us think that this is the way we should act, or this is the way we should react to things, or this is the way you have to, like, this is the proper etiquette of things. And I just love how in Bella's growth and development, she's constantly challenging that, but she's not challenging it with this viewpoint of, like, it's not like there's this viewpoint that the movie is trying to get across to you or say, this viewpoint is better. It is just literally taking a person and saying, if this person had none of those things, none of that societal training or these norms or these things that we have just been taught so long to believe and act and do, this is what they would think. They wouldn't see sex the same way you see it, or the institution of marriage, or all of these different things. They would just look at it differently. You know, she just looked at it as something she enjoyed and something that she really liked. And it was something that made her feel a certain way. But her ideas about procreation and all of that kind of stuff, it wasn't that to her. It was just something she liked. And then, like you said, so that logic, when it came to being a sex worker, and she's like, okay, I like sex. And you mean to tell me I can be paid for something that I like to do? We may not look at sex that way, but you can see how a person in this position with her, with the way she sees the world, could think of it that way, you know? And so I thought that all of that is very interesting. And then her want to experience things before she understood the truth about them. That's just such a big theme in this movie, because how often do we accept the truth about things that we've never experienced, that we accept the truth about people that we never meet, or we judge, or how judgmental we are people that we don't really understand? I mean, even you could argue, like, she didn't even understand her old self. Like, she didn't even understand why she, her old self, committed suicide. And like, you know, Dr. Baxter was saying, man, in this society, you know, committing suicide is considered an act of lunacy, or it's a crime and all of this kind of stuff. And he was talking about how taboo it was. And the interesting thing is that this Bella got to experience what her old self experienced. and then understood why the person did what she did. So there's a very, I think, good message in that too, because I mean, not saying that this is justifying suicide, but it didn't say that at all. But I do like the message of how can you really judge it if you haven't experienced what that person has experienced? And here you have a person that experienced what her old self experienced and arrived to the conclusion of, damn, no wonder she did this shit. Like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
So even that to me is kind of a thought-provoking conversational thing that this movie just, and that's just one idea that was presented here. Sorry. And you spoke about that scene where she lost her innocence and she saw all those poor people and the dead babies and everything like that. And to me, that was kind of what that scene was, is that sort of loss of innocence, like the child that first learns that the pet dog can die or whatever the case may be, you know, that first experience with something like that, where some of that innocence is lost. And so she did a great job showing how devastating that was.
And also it's interesting too, like, cause I was just thinking about the scene right after that, where she wants to like give them the money and she gives it to those two guys or whatever. Like, it's another just sort of testament to like, not trusting people is just something ingrained in us based on our environment, because she was just like, I don't have a reason not to trust you. You know what I mean? Like, she just, in no part of her mind did she think they were just going to take the money and not give it out like she wanted, you know? So it's just one of those where, man, we are so wired to not trust people because of certain things that happen, and understandably not trusting people. But the fact that she didn't have that is such kind of a beautiful thing though. Like, yeah, it sucks because it got her in some trouble and got them in a situation, but the fact that she just didn't have any knowledge of what it meant to not feel like she could trust somebody. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because how could she know that? Because this, again, this character is just wired so simple. And maybe that's kind of what it is that, you know, to be freeing is to just be very simple. I don't know you. I haven't experienced you. I don't know your personality. So therefore, what reason do I have not to trust you? I have not experienced distrust from you. So therefore, you tell me something, you say you're going to do it. You say you're going to give it to the poor people. I believe that's what you're going to do. Right. I have no reason to believe otherwise, because I have not experienced otherwise. And it's like you say, you know, you think about other situations and those things, and it's like, man, sometimes life really is as simple as that. You know what you know, and you know, and you don't know what you don't know. And
I mean, it's just crazy that we cause our own misery and we cause our own pain sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, we do it to ourselves more often than not, you know?
Yeah, we really do. And it's crazy because like, and it's almost, I don't want to say it's of no fault to our own, but some of it is just the nurture instead of the nature. It's the constantly being told that, or constantly being taught that this is the way you need to think, this is the way you need to act. A lot of it is that too. So we develop a mentality, and this character was just so good about showing how when you don't have that mentality, how differently you can see the world and how differently you can see things. And even though and also just the way that she absorbed lessons, like, I really liked the lessons she learned while she was at the whorehouse, when the old woman with tattoos that Sterling alluded to was talking to her. And she said that, and that whole lesson about you have to experience pain and sorrow and things like that too, because that too is part of the world. Yeah. And that too is what gives a person their character. And like, I know that when we talked offline, Sterling was like, why did that woman have to randomly bite ears and everything like that?
Yeah,
and
that's
I get it. That is odd. And that is a quirk. But if you think about it, her giving pain brought her some sort of pleasure. Her biting on the ear, you know, and causing Bella some pain brought her pleasure. And the whole lesson was about what was when Bella was talking about, well, why can't I choose the man? Why wouldn't the men enjoy him more if I enjoy making choices more and things like that? And then her kind of saying, but some people enjoy that you don't like it. You know, some people actually enjoy inflicting pain and things like that. And that's something you have to understand, too. Not everybody gets joy from your joy. So in a way, her biting her is actually meaningful because it's about that whole pain pleasure thing and how sometimes you also have to understand that there are people out there, they get pleasure out of your pain. They hurt people. And for some reason it means something to them. So I think that that was a good lesson. You know, it's a quirk, but it's kind of a meaningful one. Or even like the doctor and him belching the gas bubbles. I think on the surface, that just may seem like a weird quirk thing that's happening. But I also think like when you listen to the stories that William Dafoe's character was telling about how his dad just would cut him up or would just intentionally stretch him to see how much his bones could take and all of this kind of stuff like that. And just sort of how almost and just how much that doctor suppressed his emotions and almost was inhumane and was like, oh, I have to take my feelings out of this. I have to take. So it was almost like he was a machine. It was almost like he was like, you know, and then his carved up body and everything. Even though she was sort of the Frankenstein in this movie, he was kind of one too. You know what I mean? Everything was a means to an end and was a body part, something that I could manipulate or something like that. So, you know, him having to belch gas bubbles and stuff like that, it almost was just kind of this reminder that this is somebody who has lost, you know, he's lost so much of himself and so much of his humanity. You know what I mean? And everything is an experiment. Everything is a, you know, that's what it felt like to me. Like he's almost like a machine that emits gas and all this kind of stuff. Because of how much he wouldn't allow himself to feel, you know, and things of that nature. Though, what I appreciated was that that character does develop, you know, with the cancer and everything and with his health declining. And you felt like he, in the end, valued more of what was important. He wanted to see Bella again. He missed Bella. He admitted to that. You saw that him suppress. You saw a difference in him and him not so much suppressing his feelings and things like that. In the end, kind of like what his father and kind of took a left turn from sort of the monster that his father had created in him with all the experiments and everything. So even that kind of, even his story kind of had some growth in that way. So all of that was cool.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, like about the Mark Ruffalo character. Like he, definitely I didn't see, I think he was infatuated with her in the beginning. But it was kind of one of those things where he felt like, I just think he is kind of one of those male playboy type of typical people where they like to, you know, he's a person that likes to have his cake and eat it too. He's used to just swooning all these women, manipulating them, making them feel a certain way. And then when he's done and he has and his control and exerting his control and power, and once he's bored, he moves on. Or when he's done and everything like that. But Bella was so great because, and I think he was drawn to her like a moth to the flame because he couldn't control her. He couldn't control her. He wanted to, but he couldn't.
Yeah.
He just could not. He couldn't control the way she thought, the way she felt things. He couldn't, and how truthful and honest she was. And he wasn't used to that. He wasn't used to any of that. And he was very dishonest about who he actually was and how he actually felt and what he actually wanted and different things like that. He would say, he would act, he would put this facade up like he had these genuine feelings and emotions and love and all that stuff. But like you said, Heather, we knew it really wasn't that. So he was almost like the opposite of her as far as just how he handled himself, his emotions, etiquette, everything like that. And you could see how that was, how she was just such a challenge for him because yeah. she kind of goes against everything that he wanted, that he wanted a woman to be as far as being able yeah. to control and manipulate.
And everything you know? That he's used to from how women yes. act around him. And yes. I also loved that part too, when they're, I think it's when they're in Paris outside, like in the freezing, you know, trying to figure out a way home and stuff. And, you know, they're talking and he calls her some not great names. And then she just kind of says, interesting, because I feel like right before that, you just said you loved me. Like just, or I don't remember exactly what was said, but it was just one of those where she's like, which emotion actually is it? I feel like you're contradicting yourself. Just in like a way of not understanding fully what contradiction is, but understanding that that's what's happening. And it was just really, really funny. And even when he's like on the boat and he's like, oh, I love you. And then he's like, I will throw you overboard. And he's like, so do you want to marry me or do you want to kill me? Like, what is it? You know, just yeah. understanding that he's being contradictory, but not understanding, like, I guess not knowing what that is yet. And it was just like really funny for her to just call him out on it and him not expect it. Cause he's like, whatever, like he's usually just saying what he wants to say and people just buy it, you know? And she's like, I'm not falling for this. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. And that was really funny.
Yeah. And then just, you know, challenging that view of being with somebody because you feel like you have to versus understanding your needs and understanding that this person can't fulfill them. And it just be as simple as that. Like whenever they're having that conversation and she's like, look, I stayed with you because I thought that it would be better. You know, she even told another character that why he was like, why are you still with him? And she's like, because I believe it could be better. And that's her optimism and, you know, her believing that everybody has the capacity to improve. That was one of her big things that her beliefs, yeah. you know, is mm-hmm. that people have the capacity to improve. And that was great. But once she saw how he was, and who he really was and the fact that he was most likely going to stay this way. I like how she was like, well, I just need somebody with a different disposition. I need somebody who's a little more forgiving of my yeah. lifestyle and can accept that. Yeah. And can accept that I can have these different partners and things like that. And you can't seem to accept that, Duncan. So I
loved that. Cause it's, And it's just also the fact that, like, even when she went back to Max, you know, she's just like, just so you know, I've slept with a lot of people. And he's just like, and I loved that conversation because I love the fact that, for one, she also isn't ingrained with the idea of what it is to lie or hide things from people.
Exactly.
And that's such a great quality to have, you know what I mean? And so she's just kind of like, I'm just going to tell you what it is. Listen, do you have a problem with this? Because this is what I've done, you know, and she's like not ashamed of it. She's not afraid of it. She's just like, this is what's happened. You know, I need to know if you're cool with that or not. And I loved that his response was more like, I'm just jealous of the fact that they got to be with you and I haven't. And I loved that, yeah. that was his response other than just like, how dare you give your body to other people? you know, and it was a really sweet little moment between them.
Yeah. And that's a great point, because how often, whenever you're dating someone, and everybody I think is guilty of it, or when you're dating someone or just things like that, do you keep things from them because you feel like, oh, what are they going to think of me? Or
exactly.
Yeah. Personal and they shouldn't know it, or that's, you know, whatever our thought process is, you know, typically when you're first meeting someone or first thinking about the, or even like getting to that point of marriage, that probably is the time to where that person needs to know everything about you. They need to know like what you've been through and what you've done and how you feel and how you really feel about things, and be like, okay, are you cool with this?
Yeah.
And that's true. We don't have those conversations. Yeah. We're taught in a lot of ways not to have them.
Exactly. And I love that the narrative they told in this was for him to be accepting of that. And that's the response from somebody who actually loves you is, okay, that's, you know, I wish it was different, but it's fine. Like, I don't want you any less, you know? And like, I love that they told the story of, hey, you being honest about who you are and being honest about your past is something that you can tell to people. And if they truly love and care about you, they're not going to care. You know, I love that that was a story they told between those two. And yeah, it's something that you're right. We don't have those conversations enough. And sometimes when we start having them, it's too late, or it's not too late, but it's just like, it's happening way later than it should have happened. You know what I mean? So I just love that she's like, all right, I'm back now. And I want to let you know, this is what I've done. And I want to let you know that I still want to marry you. But if you're not okay with this, then I don't know what to tell you. And yeah, it just, I love that moment that they had, and just like, I don't know. And I think that's the part where I talk about like how the movie's kind of empowering in a way, you know, because it's like to just feel that, like that freedom to just be who you are with no apologies, because like, I'll be the first to admit that's hard for me. You know, there's like the, oh, like I'm a people pleaser. I want everyone to be happy. I want everyone to like me. I don't want to offend anybody in any sort of way, even if it's nothing offensive. If I feel like it could be, you know, I hesitate or whatever it is. Or if I feel like there's something that I should be ashamed of, even if I shouldn't, I don't want to tell people, you know what I mean? And so it's so empowering to feel like this lady had no apologies, no regrets. She's just like, this is what's happened. So you take it or you leave it, you know? And it's really awesome to see, like, especially like a female character, a female lead, just take control of like, for one, her sexuality, but also just in general, like how she feels and her opinions of things, having her own opinions of things and just not being sorry for anything that she's decided to experience in her life, you know?
Yeah. I agree. And it is true. Like you, I think just about growing up in any relationships, whether it just be friendships, family, whatever the case may be, how many times could I have expressed how I really felt and didn't, or thought I needed to say this thing because it would be the right thing to say to keep things at peace, but maybe not necessarily the truth? Or how many times have I, you know, I can even think back to so many times where that probably happened. And I do love that this is a movie that challenges that view. And even just the self-acceptance, you know, her learning about what happened to her and everything and being angry about it and all that stuff, but still understanding that I still value my life and there's still a life to live and there are things to appreciate. You know, even though this happened to me and this is a part of my life and I am, and I'm not happy with it, it doesn't have to dictate where I'm going and where I'm going forward and everything like that. I understand it. This is what it is, but there's still other things to do. There's still a life that to look forward to live. So I even like that. Like she found out all that stuff about her past, which her past is awful. It's dysfunctional. It's crazy. It's just insanity. you know, yeah. But she absorbed all that and said, even though I am, you know, told the doctor, even though I'm angry and there's confusion and I'm confounded by these things, like you said, Heather, I still appreciate that I'm alive. I still appreciate that I'm living. I still appreciate the living that I got to do. And there's still so much for me to see and discover and learn. So I can compartmentalize. I'm upset about that, but I can compartmentalize it and say, but it's not going to dictate everything about me. I can accept that I have that.
I mean, and it's, and I would even argue it's not even compartmentalizing so much as just like accepting that she's not okay with it, but still being like, okay, but we still press on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like being able to take
maybe
it
that's
and
better.
Still,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like being able to take it and still be like, even in spite of this, I'm loving life. You know what I mean? And I think that there's just something really beautiful about that. And
empowering, like you said.
Yeah. And like just so. that whole no apologies thing though, because you even think about the tone of anything that she says about her own life or her experiences. She's never once talking about it in like a negative way, as far as I remember. If it's a negative experience, she'll say it, but she's never saying it in a way of like, well, I hate that I exist because this terrible thing happened. You know, everything is just very like, well, this is what happened. But logically speaking, like, let's experience a different thing then. Let's keep going and find something that's better than that last thing. And it's such a like really simple, like you said before, a simple way to look at what life should really kind of be like, you know?
Yeah. And even at the end, what did she do? Like, it was very telling in that final scene that she had surrounded herself with people who cared about her and genuinely she liked and had good experiences with and everything like that. Like, she was surrounded by people. You saw some of the people that she met in some of those other countries and stuff like that. Like, she surrounded herself with people who she experienced and knew their heart and who they were, and that's who was around her. And it wasn't like it was a house full of people. It was just a few people.
Yeah.
But she was fine with that and was just reading up books and just felt free. And like, there's just something about all of that that is very encouraging and empowering. And it's like you said, it just makes you think, why haven't I just been trying?
What has my life been?
To try to get something kind of like this. It feels like it should be easy, but I think sometimes we make it hard, you know? The people that are around are the people that care about it. And she cares about.
And I love that at the end of it, it's like she ended up exactly where she wanted to be in her life. Because she made the choice of like, I mean, she like weighed all of her options. You know what I mean? Like she went off with Duncan for a little bit. She came back. She wanted to marry Max. But then she realized, oh, this person that thinks I'm the person I was before I am now has come back and wants to do life with me. And she's like, oh, let me see what that's like. Didn't care for that. Didn't like that. Came back and just decided, no, I've weighed all my options and this is where I want to be. And these are the people that I want to be around. And she just kind of cut the trash out of her life. You know what I mean? Which is something to be said for what we should be doing as human beings. It's just like, you know, like let's not continue with anything that doesn't serve us well. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's just, man, there's just something very powerful about that. It seems like a simple ending, but man, when you cut a little bit beneath the surface, it is a very powerful ending. And because you could ask Bella why every person is in that house and why she chose those people. And she would be able to answer that. You wouldn't get a single, I don't know, or an or it just sort of happened. And she'll go, nope, this happened, that happened, this happened, that happened. I experienced this person. That's why this person is here.
She does nothing without thinking about it before she does it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So
even if
it's
a simple, like, I just want to experience it. Like it's not like she's just like, oh, I don't know how I feel about it, but I'm just going to do it anyway. She's like, no, I definitely want to experience that. So I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And just being, and just being in the presence and finding those like-minded people and those people that you really connect with. And sometimes that's, and, you know, you making your own decisions because you arrived to them in the purest way possible. You arrived to these thoughts and these things and these ideologies that you have about yourself and others, and being, and if you do that, you probably are going to wind up fine with your decisions. You know, maybe not fine to everybody in the world, but at least you'll understand what you're doing and why you're doing it. And I don't know. There's just, like you said, there's just something very powerful about that.
I agree, man. Good movie with layers to it.
Telling you, but that's why I got the score of God. That's why this is indeed, a good movie. It is. It's a very good movie, but,
a bit unconventional, but good nonetheless. Yes,
very unconventional, but boy, when it hit with the relatable messages and everything like that, you peel back a little bit and man, there's a lot to get from it. So, any other thoughts on Poor Things from you?
I think I am good.
Okay, then I guess we are going to wrap this up. Please don't forget, we want to hear from you. So definitely follow us on Facebook, Cinema Slayers Podcast. You know, if you're watching this on a YouTube episode, please hit that like and subscribe. Please comment. Did you see Poor Things? What do you think of our review? What did you think about it? Do you agree with some of these messages we got from it? Or are we totally off base, totally crazy, and you didn't see that at all? You know, so we want to hear all those opinions. We want to hear all those things. So please reach out to us on Facebook, Cinema_Slayers for Instagram, and X or Twitter. We've also got the, what is it called again with the movies?
Letterboxd. Where you put how many?
Yes, Letterboxd. I'm going to remember it one of these times.
We'll just make you get one so that you can remember. Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe that's the issue. Yes. We're also on Letterboxd with Cinema Slayers. We are also on TikTok with Cinema Slayers. So see, we're on all several different platforms. So make sure you follow us. Make sure you become a part of these movie conversations because we would love to hear from you. Yeah. And just remember, as Sterling always says, we are pro slut, pro naked,
pro Sydney.
Justice for Chris, pro Sydney. man, I never remember them all. But yeah, we're pro all of those things. And one day I'm going to eat Burger King. And, and don't forget, above all else, that I once accidentally said that Moon Knight is a Best Picture winner and Sterling would never, ever, ever, ever let me live that down.
Oh, wait. Two things. You Are Knuff. I can't believe we almost forgot that one.
Oh, how could I forget that?
No way. And also, Mothers Love Emma Stone and they love comedians turned into dramatic actors because Rami Yusuf and also Jared Carmichael, who was the guy on the boat that she met, is also a comedian. So, okay. And I just realized that. So I was like, good call. Way to make these people stars out of their comfort zone.
Well, I'm glad you covered me there. I don't know how I forgot the Knuff or the Mothers one. Those are like the easiest ones to remember and I still left them off. So,
I obviously need
some more practice at this, host.
This is why we need Sterling back. He would never forget his lineup of things.
Yes. He would never forget his lineup. But yeah, with that being said, we are done here and we will see you back once again for a little Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. And all three of us will be on that one. So later. Set of fans.
Somebody will listen to me. Now, with you.
Cinema Slayers.
Oh, and funny thing is, we didn't talk about any of the sex scenes or any of that stuff, but that just goes to show like how much is in this movie. Like you almost forget, but I did like the, to talk about one last scene, the whorehouse scene where she was like, okay, I'm going to tell a joke and you're going to tell me a childhood memory and kind of that moment that she had with one of the customers with the joke and he laughed and that was cool.
That was a good icebreaker.
That was a good moment. Yeah. So
I feel like that's I feel like that's probably just a thing just in general Emma Stone does to like break the ice with people. She's just at a table of people she doesn't know. And she's like, let me tell a joke. I could totally see her just doing that in general.
Yeah. That totally felt like an Emma Stone move. Right. And everything like that. So
Yeah.
Good stuff.
She's just got a, like, what is it? I mean, I guess kind of an it factor. Like, I don't know. She's just got like a very like charming way about her, because you said that you finally have seen like Easy A, where you're just like, I mean, her comedic timing is just there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And all of her line deliveries were good. Nothing was cheesy from her. You know what I mean? It all worked. Yeah. So she can do the comedy side. She could do the drama side. Like, she's just so versatile. So, yeah, this is why she has two Oscars. That makes sense to me.
Exactly.
But, all right.
All right. We out.
We out.